They immediately moved toward one of the rich neighborhoods of Tae Talir. Vasher didn't say much as they walked, and the girl was even more unresponsive. Evenna worried for the child's mind. She had obviously had a rough couple of months. They passed from shanties to tenements to decent homes on tree-lined streets with burning lanterns. As they reached the mansions, Vasher paused on the street, setting the girl down.
Child, I'm going to say some words to you. I want you to repeat them. Repeat them and mean them.
The girl regarded him absently, nodding slightly. Vasher glanced at Vivenna.
Back away.
Vivenna opened her mouth to object, but thought better of it. She stepped back out of earshot. Fortunately, Vasher was near a lit street lamp, so she could see him well. He spoke to the little girl, and she spoke back to him. After opening the cage, Vivenna had taken the breath back from the thread. She hadn't stowed it somewhere else. And with the extra awareness she had, she thought she saw something. The girl's biochromatic aura, the normal one that all people had, flickered just slightly. It was faint. Yet with the first heightening, Vivenna could have sworn she saw it.
But Denth told me it was all or nothing. You have to give away all the breath you hold, and you certainly can't give away part of a breath.
Denth, it had been proven in other instances, was also a liar. Vasher stood, the girl climbing back into his arms. Vivenna walked up.
Where's Daddy?
Vasher didn't reply.
I'm dirty. Mummy doesn't like it when I get dirty. The dress is dirty too.
Vasher began walking. Vivenna hurriedly caught up.
Are we going home? Where have we been? It's late and I shouldn't be out. Who's that woman?
She doesn't remember. Doesn't remember where she's been. Probably doesn't remember anything of the entire experience.
Vivenna looked again at Vasher, walking with his ragged beard, eyes forward, child in one arm, nightblood in the other. He walked right up to a mansion's gates, then kicked them open. Vasher moved on to the mansion grounds, and Vivenna followed more nervously. Vivenna cringed at the sight of the guard dogs. Vasher gave the dogs a single solitary glance. Suddenly, the dogs trailed along happily, one hopping up and trying to lick his hands.
What in the name of colors is going on?
Some people were gathering at the front of the mansion, holding lanterns, trying to see what had caused the barking. One saw Vasher, said something to the others, then disappeared back inside. By the time Vivenna and Vasher had reached the front patio, a man had appeared at the front doors. He wore a white nightgown and was guarded by a couple of soldiers. They stepped forward to block Vasher, but the man in the nightgown rushed between them.
No, stay back!
He took the child from Vasher's arms.
Thank you. Thank you.
Vivenna stood quietly, staying back. The dogs continued to lick Vasher's hands, though they noticeably avoided nightblood. The man clutched his child before finally surrendering her to a woman who had just arrived.
Oh, myself! You're safe! Thank you! Thank you!
Why have you returned her?
Those who took her have been punished. That's all that should matter to you right now.
The man squinted.
Do I know you, stranger?
We've met. I asked you to argue against the war.
That's right. You didn't need to encourage me, but when they took my Zell away from me, I had to stay quiet about what had happened. I had to change my arguments or they'd have killed her.
Vasher turned away, moving to walk back down the path.
Take your child. Keep her safe. And make certain this kingdom doesn't use its lifeless for a slaughter.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Vasher continued walking. Vivenna rushed after him, eyeing the dogs.
How did you make them stop barking?
Vivenna glanced back at the mansion. Vasher passed through the dark gates.
You have redeemed yourself.
What?
Kidnapping that girl is something Denth would have done. Even if you hadn't come to Tae Talir, I would have never found her. Denth worked with too many different groups of thieves, and I thought that burglary was simply intended to disrupt supplies. Like everyone else, I ignored the carriage. You saved that girl's life.
By happenstance.
Regardless.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I lost my temper. Back in that lair. A warrior is supposed to be calm. When you duel or fight, you can't let your anger control you. That's why I've never been that good a duelist.
You did the job, and Denth has lost another pawn.
The pair moved out onto the street.
Oh, I wish I hadn't seen that lavish mansion. Doesn't raise my opinion of the Hollandrin priests.
Nanrova's father was one of the wealthiest merchants in the city. The son dedicated himself to serving the gods out of gratitude for their blessings. He takes no pay for his service.
Oh.
Priests are always easy to blame. They make convenient scapegoats. After all, anyone with a strong faith different from your own must either be a crazy zealot or a lying manipulator. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it that way. Colorless fool. I told you I'm no good at this.
It's all right. I'm getting used to it.
Washer nodded in the darkness, seeming distracted.
He is a good man. Or at least, an earnest man, trying to be good.
A part of her felt foolish for making yet another judgment. Yet she knew she couldn't live, couldn't interact without making some judgments. So she judged Vasha, not as she'd judged Denth, who had said amusing things and given her what she'd expected to see. She judged Vasha by what she had seen him do. Cry when he saw a child being held captive. Return that child to her father, his only reward an opportunity to make a rough plea for peace. Living with barely any money, dedicating himself to preventing a war. He was rough. He was brutal. He had a terrible temper. But he was a good man. And walking beside him, she felt safe for the first time in weeks.
And so we each have 20,000.
Blushweaver walked beside Lightsong on the stone pathway that led in a circle around the arena.
Yes.
Their priests, attendants, and servants followed in a holy herd, though the two gods had refused palanquin or parasol. They walked alone, side by side. Lightsong in gold and red. Blushweaver, for once, wearing a gown that actually covered her.
Amazing. How good she looks in something like that, when she takes the time to respect herself.
Lightsong wasn't certain what made him dislike her revealing outfits. Maybe he'd been a prude in his former life, or maybe he simply was one now. He smiled ruefully to himself.
How much can I really blame on my old self? That man is dead. He wasn't the one who got himself involved in the kingdom's politics.
The arena was filling, and in a rare show, all of the gods would be in attendance. Only Weatherlove was late, but he was often unpredictable.
Important events are imminent. They have been building for years now. Why should I be at the center of them?
Lightsong's dreams the night before had been so odd. Finally, no visions of war, just the moon. And some odd, twisting passages, like tunnels. Many of the gods nodded in respect as he passed their pavilions. Though, admittedly, some scowled at him, and a few just ignored him.
What a strange system of rule. Immortals, who only last a decade or two, and who have never seen the outside world. Yet, the people trust us.
I think we should share the command phrases with each other, Lightsong, so that we each have all four. Just in case.
Lightsong didn't say anything. She turned away from him, looking at the people in their colorful clothing, clogging the benches and seats.
My, my, quite the crowd. And so few of them paying attention to me. Quite rude of them, wouldn't you say?
Lightsong shrugged.
Oh, that's right. Perhaps they're just, what was it? Stunned, dazzled, and dumbfounded.
Lightsong smiled faintly, remembering their conversation a few months back, the day this had all started. Blushweaver looked at him, a longing in her eyes.
Indeed. Or perhaps they're really just ignoring you, in order to compliment you.
And how exactly does ignoring me make a compliment?
It provokes you to be indignant, and we all know that is when you are in the best form.
You like my form, then?
It has its uses. Unfortunately, I cannot compliment you by ignoring you as the others do. You see, only truly, sincerely ignoring you would provide the intended compliment. I am actually helpless and unable to ignore you. I do apologize.
I see. I'm flattered, I think. Yet you seem very good at ignoring some things. Your own divinity, general good manners, my feminine wiles?
You're hardly wily, my dear. A wily man is one who fights with a small, carefully hidden dagger in reserve. You are more like a man who crushes his opponent with a stone block. Regardless, I do have another method of dealing with you. One that you shall likely find quite flattering.
Somehow I find myself doubting.
Oh, you should have more faith in me. I am, after all, a god. In my divine wisdom, I have realized that the only way to truly compliment one such as you, Blushweaver, is to be far more attractive, intelligent, and interesting than you.
Huh. Well then, I feel rather insulted by your presence.
Touché.
And are you going to explain why you consider competing with me to be the most sincere form of compliment?
Of course I am. My dear, have you ever known me to make an inflammatorily ridiculous statement without providing an equally ridiculous explanation to substantiate it?
Of course not. You are nothing if not exhaustive in your self-congratulatory made-up logic.
I am rather exceptional in that regard.
Undoubtedly.
Anyway, by being far more stunning than you are, I invite people to ignore you and pay attention to me. That, in turn, invites you to be your usual charming self, throwing little tantrums and being overly seductive to draw their attention back to you. And that, as I explained, is when you are most majestic. Therefore, the only way to make certain you receive the attention you deserve is to draw it all away from you. It's really quite difficult. I hope you appreciate all the work I do to be so wonderful.
Let me assure you, I do appreciate it. In fact, I appreciate it so very much that I would like to give you a break. You can back off. I will bear the awful burden of being the most wonderful of the gods.
Oh, I couldn't possibly let you.
Oh, but if you are too wonderful, my dear, you will completely destroy your image.
That image is getting tiresome anyway. I've long sought to be the most notoriously laziest of the gods, but I'm realizing more and more that the task is beyond me. The others are all naturally so much more delightfully useless than I am. They just pretend not to be aware of it.
Light song, one could say you begin to sound jealous.
One could also say that my feet smell like guava fruit. Just because one could say it doesn't mean it's relevant.
You're incorrigible.
Really? I thought I was in Tetelier. When did we move?
That pun was a stretch.
Perhaps it was just a feint.
A feint?
Yes, an intentionally weak joke to distract from the real one.
Which is?
Light song hesitated, glancing at the arena.
The joke that has been played on all of us. The joke that the others in the Pantheon have played by giving me so much influence over what our kingdom will do.
Blushweaver frowned at him, obviously sensing the growing bitterness in his voice. They stopped on the walkway, Blushweaver facing him, her back to the arena floor. Light song feigned a smile, but the moment was dying. They couldn't go on as they had, not amidst the weighty matters in motion all around them.
Our brothers and sisters aren't as bad as you imply.
Only a matchless group of idiots would give me control of their armies.
They trust you.
They're lazy. They want others to make the difficult decisions. That's what this system encourages, Blushweaver. We're all locked in here, expected to spend our time in idleness and pleasure. And then we're supposed to know what is best for our country? We're more afraid of the outside than we're willing to admit. All we really have are artworks and dreams. That's why you and I ended up with these armies. Nobody else wants to be the one who actually sends our troop out to kill and die. They all want to be involved, but nobody wants to be responsible.
Blushweaver looked up at him, a goddess of perfect form. So much stronger than the others. But she hid it behind her own veil of triviality.
I know one thing that you said is true.
And that is?
You are wonderful, Light Song.
Light Song stood there, looking into her eyes for a time. Widely set, beautiful green eyes.
You're not going to give me your command phrases, are you?
Light Song shook his head.
I brought you into this. You always talk about being useless, but we all know that you're one of the few who always goes through every picture, sculpture, and tapestry in his gallery. The one who hears every poem and song. The one who listens most deeply to the pleas of his petitioners.
You are all fools. There is nothing in me to respect.
No, you're the one who makes us laugh, even while you insult us. Can't you see what that does?
Can't you see how you inadvertently set yourself above everyone else? You didn't do it intentionally, Lightsong. And that's what makes it work so well. In a city of frivolity, you're the only one who's shown any measure of wisdom. In my opinion, that's why you hold the armies.
Lightsong didn't reply.
I knew you might resist me, but I thought that I'd be able to influence you anyway.
You can. As you've said, it's your doing that I'm involved in all this.
I can't decide which feeling for you is stronger, Lightsong. My love or my frustration.
I accept them both, Blushweaver. With honor.
Ciri walked through the palace corridors, surrounded by her brown, uniformed serving women, a dozen worries circling through her brain.
First, go to Lightsong. It won't look odd for me to sit with him. We often spend time together at these things. I wait for Susabrun to arrive. Then I ask Lightsong if we can talk in private, without our servants or his priests. I explain what I have discovered about the God King. I tell him about the way Susabrun is being held captive. Then we see what he does.
Ciri's biggest fear was that Lightsong would already know. Could he be part of the entire conspiracy? She trusted him as much as she trusted anyone except Susabrun, but her nerves had a way of making her question everything and everyone.
Assuming Lightsong agrees to help, I wait for the break. Once the priests leave the sand, Lightsong goes and speaks with several other gods. They each go to their priests and instruct them to begin a discussion in the arena about why the God King never speaks to them. They force the God King's priest to let him offer his own defense.
Ciri didn't like depending on the priests, even those who weren't members of Suzebron's priesthood, but this did seem like the best way. Besides, if the priests of the various gods didn't do as instructed, Lightsong and the others would realize that they were being undermined by their own servants. Either way, Ciri realized she was getting into very dangerous territory.
I started in dangerous territory. The man I love is threatened with death, and any children I bear will be taken from me.
Ciri slowed. At the end of the hallway in front of the doors out to the court, a small group of priests stood with several lifeless soldiers. They were silhouetted by the evening light. The priests turned toward her, and one pointed.
Colors!
Another group of priests was approaching up the back hallway.
No, not now.
The two groups of priests closed on her. Ciri considered running, but where? Dashing in her long dress, pushing through servants and lifeless, was hopeless. She raised her chin, eyeing the priests with a haughty stare, and kept her hair completely under control.
What is the meaning of this?
We're terribly sorry, Vessel, but it has been decided that you shouldn't be exerting yourself while in your condition.
My condition? What foolishness is this?
The child, Vessel. We can't risk danger to it. There are many who would try to harm you should they know that you are carrying.
Child? How could they know that Susabrun and I have actually started?
But no. She would know if she were with child. However, she'd supposedly been sleeping with the God King for months now. That was just enough time for a pregnancy to have begun to show. It would sound plausible to the people of the city.
Fool! Assuming that they've already found their replacement God King, I don't actually need to bear them a child. They just have to make everyone think I was pregnant. There is no child. You were just waiting. You just had to stall until you had an excuse to lock me away.
Please, Vessel.
The priest gestured for a lifeless to take her arm. She didn't struggle. She forced herself to remain calm, looking the priest in the eyes. He looked away.
This will be for the best. It's for your own good.
I'm sure it is.
Vivenna sat among the crowds, watching and waiting. Part of her found it foolish to come out into the open so flagrantly. However, that part of her, the cautious Idrian princess, was growing more and more quiet. Dense people had found her when she'd been hiding in the slums. She'd probably be safer in the crowds with Vasher than she ever had been in the alleyways, particularly considering how well she now blended in. She hadn't realized how natural it could feel to sit in trousers and a tunic, brightly colored and completely ignored. Vasher appeared at the railing above the benches. She carefully slipped out of her seat, Someone else took it immediately and walked toward him. The priests had already begun their arguments down below. Namrova, his daughter restored to him, had started by announcing the retraction of his previous position. He currently was leading the discussion against war. He had very little support. Vavena joined Vosher along the railing. He didn't carry Nightblood, at her insistence. He had left the sword behind with her own dueling blade. She wasn't certain how he'd managed to sneak the blade in the last time he'd come to the court, but the last thing they wanted was to draw attention.
Well?
If Denth is here, I couldn't find him.
No surprise, considering the size of this crowd.
There were bodies all around them, hundreds lining the railing alone.
Where did they all come from? This is far more jammed than the other assembly sessions.
People who are granted a one-time visit to the court can hold their token of entry until they want to use it. A lot of them use those at a general court assembly, rather than one of the smaller meetings. It's their one chance to see all of the gods at once.
Vavena turned back to look over the throne. She suspected it also had to do with the rumors she'd heard. People thought that this session would be the one where the Pantheon of Returned finally declared war on Idris.
Nanurova argues well.
Vavena couldn't actually hear the priest because of the crowds. The Returned apparently had messengers relaying the transcripts. She wondered why someone just didn't order all the people to be quiet. That didn't seem to be the Halandran way. They liked chaos. Or at least they liked the opportunity to sit and chat while important events were in progress.
Manrova is being ignored. He's changed his mind twice now on the same issue. He lacks credibility.
He should explain why he changed his mind then.
He might, but I don't know. If the people knew his child had been kidnapped, it would make some more afraid, and they would decide that Idrian instigators had been behind it, no matter what he said. Plus, there's that stubborn Halandran pride. Priests are particularly bad. Mentioning that his daughter had been taken and that he had been pressed into changing his politics.
I thought you liked the priests.
Some of them, not others.
When Vasha said that, he eyed the God King's pedestal. Suzebron had yet to arrive, and they had started without him. Ciri wasn't there either. That annoyed Vavena, since she'd been anticipating checking in on the girl, if only from a distance. Vasha looked back at the floor of the arena, leaning on the railing, looking anxious.
What?
Vasha shrugged.
Tell me.
I just don't like leaving Nightblood alone for too long.
What's it going to do? We locked it in the closet.
Vasha shrugged again.
Honestly, you would think that you'd admit that bringing a 5-foot-long black sword out in public would be rather conspicuous. It doesn't help, mind you, that said sword bleeds smoke and can talk in people's minds.
I don't mind being conspicuous.
I do.
You're right, of course. I've just never been good at being unobtrusive. Denth used to make fun of me for that, too.
You were friends?
Vasher turned away.
Kalat's phantoms! One of these days, someone in this colors-cursed city is going to tell me the whole truth. I'll probably die of shock.
I'm going to see if I can find out why the God King is taking so long. I'll be back.
Vavena nodded, and he was gone. She leaned down, wishing she hadn't relinquished her seat. Once, she would have felt stifled by the large mass of people. But she'd grown used to the busy market streets, and so being surrounded by people wasn't as intimidating as it had been. Besides, there was her breath. She'd put some of it into her shirt, but she'd held on to a portion. She needed to be of at least the first heightening to pass through the gates into the court without being questioned. Vavena felt Vasher approach before he arrived. Not only did he have a lot of breath, but he was watching her, and she could feel the slight familiarity of that gaze. She turned, picking him out of the crowd. He stood out far more than she did in his darker, ragged clothing.
Congratulations.
Why?
You'll soon be an aunt.
What are you... Ciri?
Your sister is pregnant. The priests are going to make an announcement later this evening. The God King is apparently remaining in his palace to celebrate.
Vavena stood stunned.
Ciri. Pregnant.
Ciri. Was still a little girl in Vavena's mind, bearing the child of that thing in the palace. And yet wasn't Vavena now fighting to keep that thing on his throne?
No, I haven't forgiven Halandran, even if I am learning not to hate it. I can't let Idris be attacked and destroyed.
Vavena felt a panic. Suddenly all of her plans seemed meaningless. What would the Halandrin do to her sister once they had their heir?
We have to get her out, Vasher. We have to rescue her. Please, Vasher. She's my sister. I thought to protect her by ending this war, but if your hunch is right, then the God King himself is one of those who wants to invade Idris. Ciri won't be safe with him.
All right. I will do what I can.
Vivenna nodded, turning back to the arena. The priests were withdrawing.
Where are they going?
To their gods. To seek the will of the Pantheon in formal vote.
About the war?
Vasha nodded.
It is time.
Lightsong waited beneath his canopy, a couple of serving men fanning him, a cup of chilled juice in his hand, lavish snacks spread out to his side.
Blushweaver brought me into this, because she was worried that Halandrin would be taken by surprise.
The priests were consulting with their gods. He could see several of them kneeling before they returned, heads bowed. It was the way that government worked in Halandrin. The priests debated their options, then they sought the will of the gods. That would become the will of the Pantheon. That would become the will of Halandrin itself. Only the God King could veto a decision of the full Pantheon. And he had chosen not to attend this meeting.
So self-congratulatory on spawning a child that he couldn't even bother with the future of his own people. I had hoped he was better than that.
Larimar approached. Though he had been down below with the other high priests, he had offered no arguments to the court. Larimar tended to keep his thoughts to himself.
Please favor us with your will, Lightsong, my god.
Lightsong didn't respond. He looked up across the open arena to where Blushweaver's canopy stood, verdant in the dimming evening light.
Oh god, please, give me the knowledge I seek. Should we go to war with our kinsmen, the Idrians? Are they rebels who need to be quelled?
Priests were already returning from their supplications. Each held aloft a flag indicating the will of their god or goddess. Green for a favorable response, red for dissatisfaction with the petition. In this case, green meant war. So far, five of the returning seven flew green.
Your Grace?
Lightsong stood up.
They vote. But what good are their votes? They hold no authority. Only two votes really matter.
More green. Flags flapped as priests ran down the walkways. The arena was abuzz with people. They could see the inevitable. To the side, Lightsong could see Larimar following him. The man must be frustrated. Why didn't he ever show it? Lightsong approached Blushweaver's pavilion. Almost all of the priests had gotten their answers, and the vast majority of them carried flags of green. Blushweaver's high priestess still knelt before her. Blushweaver, of course, waited upon the drama of the moment. Lightsong stopped outside of her canopy. Blushweaver reclined inside, watching him calmly, though he could sense her true anxiety. He knew her too well.
Are you going to make your will known?
If I resist, this declaration will be for naught. The gods can shout war until they are blue, but I control the armies. If I don't allow them my lifeless, then Halandrin will not win any wars.
You would defy the will of the Pantheon?
It is my right to do so, just as any of them have the same right.
But you have the lifeless.
That doesn't mean I have to do what I'm told.
There was a moment of silence before Blushweaver waved to her priestess. The woman stood, then raised a flag of green and ran down to join the others. The people must know that Blushweaver's political wranglings had left her in a position of power. Not bad for a person who had started without command of a single soldier.
With her control and with that many troops, she'll be an integral part of the planning, diplomacy, and execution of the war. Blushweaver could emerge from this as one of the most powerful return in the history of the kingdom. And so could I.
Lightsong stared for a long moment. He hadn't spoken of his dreams the last night to Larimar. He'd kept them to himself. Those dreams of twisting tunnels and of the rising moon just barely cresting the horizon. Could it be possible that they actually meant something? He couldn't decide about anything.
I need to think about this some more.
What? What about the vote?
Lightsong shook his head.
Lightsong, you can't leave us hanging like this.
Actually, I can. I'm frustrating like that.
He left the arena, heading back to his palace without giving his vote.
I'm glad you came back for me. It was very lonely in that closet.
Vasher didn't reply as he walked across the top of the wall surrounding the Court of God. It was late, dark, and quiet, though a few of the palaces still shone with light. One of those belonged to Lightsong the Bold.
I don't like the darkness.
You mean darkness like now?
No, in the closet.
You can't even see.
A person knows when they are in darkness, even when they can't see.
Vasher didn't know how to respond to that. He paused atop the wall, overlooking Lightsong's palace. Red and gold. Bold colors indeed.
You shouldn't ignore me. I don't like it.
Vasher knelt down, studying the palace. He'd never met the one called Lightsong, but he had heard rumors. The most scurrilous of the gods, the most condescending and mocking. And this was the person who held the fate of two kingdoms in his hands. There was an easy way to influence that fate.
We're going to kill him, aren't we?
Vasher just stared at the palace.
We should kill him. Come on, we should do it. We really should do it.
Why do you care? You don't know him.
He's evil.
You don't even know what that is.
For once, Nightblood was silent. That was the great crux of the problem, the issue that had dominated most of Vasher's life, a thousand breaths. That was what it took to awaken an object of steel and give it sentience. Even Shashara hadn't fully understood the process, though she had first devised it. It took a person who had reached the ninth heightening to awaken stone or steel. Even then, this process shouldn't have worked. It should have created an awakened object with no more of a mind than the tassels on his cloak. Nightblood should not be alive. And yet he was. Shashara had always been the most talented of them, far more capable than Vasher himself, who had used tricks like encasing bones in steel or stone to make his creations. Shashara had been spurred on by the knowledge that she'd been shown by Yestiel and the development of Ichor alcohol. She had studied, experimented, practiced, and she'd done it. She'd learned to forge the breath of a thousand people into a piece of steel, awakened it to sentience, and give it a command. That single command took on immense power, providing a foundation for the personality of the object awakened. With Nightblood, she and Vasher had spent much time in thought, then finally chosen a simple yet elegant command.
Destroy evil!
It had seemed like such a perfect logical choice. There was only one problem, something neither of them had foreseen. How was an object of steel, an object that was so removed from life that it would find the experience of living strange and alien, supposed to understand what evil was?
I'm figuring it out. I've had a lot of practice.
The sword wasn't really to blame. It was a terrible, destructive thing, but it had been created to destroy. It still didn't understand life or what life meant. It only knew its command, and it tried so very hard to fulfill it.
That man down there, the god in the palace, he holds the power to start this war. You don't want this war to start. That's why he's evil.
Why does that make him evil?
Because he will do what you don't want him to.
We don't know that for certain. Plus, who is to say that my judgment is best?
It is! Let's go! Let's kill him! You told me war is bad. He will start a war. He's evil! Let's kill him! Let's kill him!
The sword was getting excited. Basha could feel it, feel the danger in its blade, the twisted power of breaths that had been pulled from living hosts and shoved into something unnatural. He could picture them breathing out, black and corrupted, twisting in the wind, drawing him toward Lightsong, pushing him to kill.
No.
You locked me in a closet. You should apologize.
I'm not going to apologize by killing someone.
Just throw me in there. If he's evil, he'll kill himself.
This gave Vasher pause.
Callous.
The sword seemed to be getting more subtle each year, though Vasher knew he was just imagining things, projecting. Awakened objects didn't change or grow. They simply were what they were. It was still a good idea.
Maybe later.
You are afraid.
You don't know what fear is.
I do. You don't like killing returned. You're afraid of them.
The sword was wrong, of course, but on the outside, Basha supposed that his hesitation did look like fear. It had been a long time since he dealt with the returned. Too many memories, too much pain. He made his way to the God King's palace. The structure was old, far older than the palaces that surrounded it. Once, this palace had been a seaside outpost, overlooking the bay. No city, no colors. It amused Basher that it had become the home of the God King of the Iridescent Tones. Basher slid Nightblood into a strap on his back, then jumped from the wall toward the palace. Awakened tassels around his legs gave him extra strength, letting him leap some 20 feet. Basha slammed against the side of the building, smooth onyx blocks rubbing his skin. He twitched his fingers, and the tassels on his sleeves grabbed onto the ledge above him, holding him tight.
Climb things, then grab things, then pull me up.
Three commands in one awakening, a difficult task for some. For him, however, it had become as simple as blinking. The belt untied itself, revealing it to be far longer than it looked when wrapped around him. The 25 feet of rope snaked up the side of the building, curling inside a window. Seconds later, the rope hauled Basher up and into the air. Awakened objects could, if created well, have much more strength than regular muscles. He'd once seen a small group of ropes, not much thicker than his own, lift and toss boulders at an enemy fortification. He released his tassel grips, then pulled Nightblood free as the rope deposited him inside the building. Fasha knelt silently, eyes searching the darkness. The room was unoccupied.
Your breath to mine.
Fasha wrapped the rope around his arm and held it in a loose coil.
Who are we going to kill?
It's not always about killing.
Vivenna? Is she in here?
The sword was trying to interpret his thoughts again. It had trouble with things that weren't fully formed in Basher's head. Most thoughts passed through a man's mind were fleeting and momentary. Flashes of image, sound, or scent. Connections made, then lost, then recovered again. That sort of thing was difficult for Nightblood to interpret. Vivenna, the source of a lot of his troubles. His work in the city had been easier when he'd been able to assume that she was working willingly with Dent. Then, at least, he'd been able to blame her.
Where is she? Is she here? She doesn't like me, but I like her.
Basha hesitated in the dark hallway.
You do?
Yes. She's nice. And she's pretty.
Nice and pretty. Words that Nightblood didn't really understand. He had simply learned when to use them. Still, the sword did have opinions, and it rarely lied. It must like Vivenna, even if it couldn't explain why.
She reminds me of a returned.
Of course. That makes sense.
Basha moved on.
What?
She's descended from one. You can tell by the hair. There's a bit of returned in her.
Nightblood didn't respond to that, but Basha could feel it thinking. He paused at an intersection. He was pretty sure he knew where the God King's chambers would be. However, a lot of the interior seemed different now. The fortress had been stark, built with odd twists and turns to confuse an invading foe. Those remained. All the stonework was the same. But the open dining halls, or garrison rooms, had been split into many smaller rooms, colorfully decorated in the mode of the Halandran upper class. Where would the God King's wife be? If she were pregnant, she'd be under the care of servants, one of the larger complex of chambers he assumed on a higher level. He made his way to a stairwell. Fortunately, it seemed late enough that there were very few people awake.
The sister, that's who you're after. You're rescuing Vivenna's sister.
Basha nodded quietly in the darkness, feeling his way up the stairs, counting on his biochroma to let him know if he approached anyone. Though most of his breath was stored in his clothing, he had just enough to awaken the rope and to keep him aware.
You like Vivenna too?
Nonsense.
Then why?
Her sister. She's a key to all of this somehow. I realized it today. As soon as the Queen arrived, the real move to start the war surged.
Nightblood fell silent. That kind of logical leap was a bit too complex for it.
I see.
At the very least, she's a very handy hostage for the Halandran. The God King's priests, or whoever's behind this, can threaten the girl's life should the war go poorly for them. She makes an excellent tool.
One you intend to remove.
Basha nodded, reaching the top of the stairwell and slinking through one of the corridors. He walked until he sensed someone nearby, a maidservant approaching.
Grab and pull to me.
Basha awakened his rope, stood in the shadows of an alcove and waited. As she passed, the rope shot from the shadows, wrapped around her waist, and yanked her into the darkness. Basha quickly wrapped his tassel hands around her mouth. The rope held her tightly. He felt a little stab of guilt as he loomed over her, her terrified eyes tearing up. Basha reached for Nightblood and pulled the sword slightly out of its sheath. The girl immediately looked sick, a good sign.
I need to know where the queen is.
Basha forced Nightblood up so that his hilt touched her cheek.
You're going to tell me.
Basha held her like that for a time, watching her squirm, feeling unhappy with himself. Finally, he relaxed the tassels, keeping the sword against her cheek. As she began to retch, Basha turned her to the side.
Tell me.
Southern corner. This floor.
Basha nodded, then tied her up with a rope and gagged her.
Your breath to mine.
The unawakened rope held the girl tightly. He pushed Nightblood back into the sheath, then rushed down the hallway.
You won't kill a god who plans to march his armies to war, but you nearly choke a young woman to death.
It was a complicated statement for the sword. However, it lacked the accusation that a human would have put into the words. To Nightblood, it really was just a question.
I don't understand my morality either. I suggest you avoid confusing yourself.
Basha found the place easily. It was guarded by a large group of brutish men who seemed rather out of place in the fine palace hallways.
Something strange is going on here.
What do you mean?
Guards at the door. Soldiers, not servants. So they had already taken her captive. Was she really even pregnant? Were the priests just securing their power? That many men would be impossible to kill without making noise. The best he could hope for was to take them fast. Maybe they were far enough from anyone else that a brief fight wouldn't be heard. Basha sat for a few minutes, jaw clenched. Then, finally, he stepped closer and tossed Nightblood in amongst the men. All of the men's eyes turned toward it. And, at that moment, something grabbed Basha by the shoulder and yanked him backward. Basha threw his hands up to wrestle with whatever had him, and awakened rope.
You give it to me! It's war!
Basha pulled out the knife in his boot, then sliced through the awakened rope. Basha was thrown back against the wall. He grabbed his attacker by the face with one of his arm tassels, then twisted the man back and threw him into the wall. Another figure charged him from behind, but Basha's awakened cloak caught that one, tripping him. Basha quickly snatched up the cloak of one of the fallen men.
Grab things other than me.
The cloak whipped about, taking down another man. Basha killed the man with a swipe of his dagger. Basha kicked another man. Basha lunged, making for Nightblood, but three more figures burst out of the rooms around him, cutting him off. Men were all around, dozens of them. Basha kicked out. Another man pulled Basha's cloak off with a lucky twist. Others piled on top of him. And then, another awakened rope snapped out, tying his legs together. Basha reached for his vest.
Your breath!
Basha began to draw in some breath to use for an attack, but three men grabbed his hand and pulled it away. Within seconds, he was wrapped up in the awakened rope. His cloak still fought against three men who were struggling to cut it up, but Basha himself was pinned. Someone emerged from the room to his left.
My good friend.
Denth nodded for one of his lackeys, the one known as Tong Fa, to move down the hallway toward the queen's room. Denth knelt beside Basha.
Very good to see you. Still as eloquent as ever, I see.
You know the best thing about you, Vasha? You're solid, predictable. I guess I am too, in a way. Hard to live as long as we have without falling into patterns, eh?
Vasha didn't reply. A couple of men came up behind Vasha and gagged him. He noticed with satisfaction that he'd taken down a good dozen opponents before they'd managed to stop him. Denth eyed the fallen soldiers.
Mercenaries, no risk is too great, assuming the pay is right. And you were always to be my payment, Vasha. I owe you for Shashara even still. We've been waiting, hidden in the palace here for a good 2 weeks, knowing that eventually the good Princess Vivenna would send you to save her sister.
Tongfa returned with a bundle held in a blanket. Nightblood.
Throw that out somewhere far away.
I don't know, Denth. I kind of think we should keep it. It could be very useful.
The beginnings of the lust began to show in Tongfa's eyes. The desire to draw Nightblood, to use the sword, to destroy evil. Really, just to destroy. Denth stood and snatched the bundle away. Then he smacked Tongfa on the back of the head.
Stop whining, I just saved your life. Go check on the queen and clean up that mess. I'll take care of the sword myself.
You always get so nasty when Vasha's around.
Tongfa waddled away. Denth wrapped up Nightblood securely. Vasha watched, hoping to see the lust appear in Denth's eyes. Unfortunately, Denth was far too strong-willed to be taken by the sword. He had nearly as much history with it as Vasha did.
Take away all his awakened clothing, then hang him up in that room over there. He and I are going to have a long talk about what he did to my sister.
Lightsong sat in one of the rooms of his palace, surrounded by finery, a cup of wine in his hand. Despite the very late hour, servants moved in and out, piling up furniture, paintings, vases, and small sculptures. Anything that could be moved. The riches sat in heaps. Lightsong lounged back on his couch, ignoring empty plates of food and broken cups, which he refused to let his servants take away. A pair of servants entered, carrying a red and gold couch. They propped it up by the far wall, nearly toppling a pile of rugs. Lightsong watched them leave, then downed the rest of his wine. He dropped the empty cup to the floor beside the others and held out his hand for another full one. A servant provided, as always. He wasn't drunk. He couldn't get drunk.
Do you ever feel like something is going on? Something far greater than you are? Like a painting you can only see the corner of, no matter how you squint and search?
Every day, Your Grace.
Larimar sat on a stool beside Lightsong's couch. As always, he watched events calmly, though Lightsong could sense the man's disapproval as another group of servants piled several marble figurines in the corner.
How do you deal with it?
I have faith, Your Grace, that someone understands.
Not me, I hope.
You are part of it, but it is much larger than you.
Lightsong frowned to himself, watching more servants enter. Soon, the room would be so piled with his wealth that his servants wouldn't be able to move in and out.
It's odd, isn't it?
Lightsong gestured toward a pile of paintings.
Arranged like this, none of it looks beautiful anymore. When you put it together in piles, it just seems like junk.
The value in something relates to how it is treated, Your Grace. If you see these items as junk, then they are, regardless of what someone else would pay for them.
There's a lesson in there somewhere, isn't there?
I am a priest, after all. We have a tendency to preach.
That's enough. You can go now.
The servants, having grown resigned to being banished, left the room promptly. Soon, Lightsong and Larimar were alone with piles and piles of riches, all stolen from other parts of his palace and brought into this one room.
So what is the point of all this, Your Grace?
This is what I mean to them. The people. They'll give up their riches for me. They sacrifice the breath of their souls to keep me alive. I suspect that many would even die for me.
Larimar nodded quietly.
And all I'm expected to do at the moment is choose their fates for them. Do we go to war or do we remain at peace? What do you think?
I could argue for either side, Your Grace. It would be easy to sit here and condemn the war on mere principle,
War is a terrible, terrible thing. And yet, it seems that few great accomplishments in history ever occur without the unfortunate fact of military action. Even the Many War, which caused so much destruction, can be regarded as the foundation of modern Halandran power in the Inner Sea region.
Lightsong nodded.
But to attack our brethren? Despite provocation, I cannot help but think that invading is too extreme. How much death, how much suffering are we willing to cause simply to prove that we won't be pushed around?
And what would you decide?
Fortunately, I don't have to.
And if you're forced to?
Larimar sat for a moment. Then, carefully, he removed the large mitre from his head, revealing his thinning black hair plastered to the skull with sweat. He set aside the ceremonial headgear.
I speak to you as a friend, Lightsong, not your priest. The priest cannot influence his god for fear of disrupting the future.
Lightsong nodded.
And as a friend, I honestly have trouble deciding what I would do. I didn't argue on the floor of the court.
You rarely do.
I'm worried. I don't think we can ignore the threat to our kingdom. The fact of the matter is, Idris is a rebel faction living within our borders. We've ignored them for years, enduring under their almost tyrannical control of the northern passes.
So you're for attacking?
No. No, I don't think that even Idris's rebellion can justify the slaughter it would take to get those passes back.
Great. So you think we should go to war, but not attack?
Actually, yes. We declare war, we make a show of force, and we frighten them into realizing just how precarious their position is. If we then hold peace talks, I'll bet we could forge more favorable treaties for use of the passes. They formally renounce their claim to our throne. We recognize their independent sovereignty. Wouldn't we both get what we want?
I don't know. That's a very reasonable solution, but I don't think those who are calling for war would accept it. It seems that we're missing something, Scoot. Why now? Why are tensions so high after the wedding, which should have unified us?
I don't know, Your Grace.
Well then, let's find out.
Ciri would have been annoyed if she hadn't been so terrified. She sat alone in the black bedchamber. It felt wrong for Suzebron to not be there with her. She'd hoped that maybe he would still be allowed to come to her when night fell. But, of course, he didn't arrive. Whatever the priests were planning, it didn't require her to actually be pregnant. Not now that they'd played their hand and locked her up. Ciri sat up on the bed, hope reviving. But it was only the guard checking on her again. One of the crass, soldier-like men who had been guarding her in recent hours.
Why did they change to these men? What happened to the lifeless and the priests who were watching me before? Oh.
Ciri lay back down on the bed, staring up at the canopy, still dressed in her fine gown. Her mind kept flashing to her first week in the palace, when she'd been locked inside for her wedding jubilation. It had been difficult enough then, and she'd known when it would be over. Now, she didn't even have an assurance that she'd live through the next few days.
No, they'll keep me around long enough for my baby to be born. I'm insurance. If something goes wrong, they'll still need me to show off.
That was little comfort. The thought of 6 months cooped up inside the palace, not allowed to see anyone lest they see that she wasn't really pregnant, was frightening enough to make her want to scream. But what could she do?
Hope in Suzebron. I taught him to read, and I gave him the determination that he needs to break free from his priests. That will have to be enough.
Your Grace, are you certain you want to do this?
Lightsong crouched down, peeking through the bushes toward Mercy Star's palace. Most of the windows were dark. That was good. However, she still had a number of guards patrolling the palace. She was afraid of another break-in, and rightly so. In the distance, he saw the moon just barely rising into the night sky. It almost matched the position he had seen in his dream the night before, the same dream where he'd seen the tunnels. Were these things really symbols? Signs from the future? Lightsong still resisted. The truth was, he didn't want to believe he was a god. It implied too many things. But he couldn't ignore the images, even if they were just spoken from his subconscious. He had to get into those passages beneath the court of gods, had to see if, at last, if there was something prophetic about what he had seen. The timing seemed important. The rising moon, just another degree or so.
There.
Lightsong looked down from the sky. A guard patrol was approaching.
Your Grace.
I should have brought a sword.
You don't know how to use one, Your Grace.
We don't know that.
Your Grace, this is foolishness. Let's go back to your palace. If we must see what is in those tunnels, we can hire someone from the city to sneak in.
That would take too long.
A guard patrol passed their side in the palace.
You ready?
No.
Then wait here.
Lightsong took off in a dash toward the palace.
Kalad's phantoms!
Lightsong didn't look back. He just kept running toward the open window. Lightsong climbed up through the window, then reached a hand out to help Larimar when he arrived.
You really need to exercise more regularly, Scoot.
Lightsong crept toward the doorway and peeked out into the hall beyond.
I wonder why the man who attacked the building didn't come in through the window.
Then, Lightsong noticed that the guard standing at the inner doorway had an easy view of this particular room.
Well then, time for the backup plan.
Lightsong walked out into the hallway. Larimar followed, terrified as Lightsong walked straight toward the guards.
Hello!
Lightsong turned from the guards and walked down the hallway.
Wait! Stop! You dare command a guard?
The guard froze. Then they glanced at each other.
They're going to alert others. We'll be caught.
Then we should move quickly.
Not again.
They quickly reached the trap door. Lightsong knelt, feeling around for a few moments before finding the hidden clasp.
Down we go.
Larimar shook his head in resignation, then climbed down the ladder into darkness. Lightsong grabbed a lamp off the wall and followed. The bottom wasn't very far down. Lightsong found a tired Larimar sitting on some boxes in what was obviously a small storage cellar.
Congratulations, Your Grace. We found the secret hiding place of their flower.
Lightsong moved through the chamber, poking at the walls.
Something living?
He pointed at one wall.
That direction. I can feel it with my life sense.
Larimar raised an eyebrow, standing. They pulled back a few boxes, and behind them was a small tunnel entrance cut into the wall. Lightsong smiled, then crawled down through it, pushing the lamp ahead of him.
I'm not sure I'll fit.
If I fit, you will.
Eventually, Lightsong passed out of another hole into a much larger tunnel, lit by several lanterns hanging from one of the walls. He stood up, feeling self-satisfied as Larimar squeezed through. Lightsong threw a lever and let a grate drop down over the opening.
There. They'll have trouble following now.
And we'll have trouble escaping.
Escape? Why would we want to do that?
Pardon me, Your Grace, but it seems to me that you are getting far too much enjoyment from this experience.
Well, I'm called Lightsong the Bold. It feels good to finally be living up to the title. Now, hush. I can still feel life nearby.
The tunnel was obviously man-made and resembled Lightsong's idea of a mine shaft, just like the image from his dreams. The tunnels were several branches, and the life he sensed was straight ahead. Lightsong didn't go that way, but instead turned left toward a tunnel that sloped steeply downward. He followed it for a few minutes to judge its likely trajectory.
Figured it out yet?
The lifeless barracks. If this tunnel continues this way, it will lead us directly to them.
Why would they need a secret tunnel to the barracks? Any god can go there whenever he wants.
Larimar shook his head and they continued down the tunnel. Sure enough, after a short time, they arrived at a trap door in the ceiling, which, when pushed up, led into one of the dark, lifeless warehouses. Lightsong looked out at the endless rows of legs, barely illuminated by his lamp. He pulled his head back down, closed the trap door, and they followed the tunnel further.
It goes in a square.
With doors up into each of the lifeless barracks, I'll bet.
Larimar reached out, taking a piece of dirt from the wall and crumbling it between his fingers.
This tunnel is newer than the one we were in up above.
Lightsong nodded.
Yeah, we should keep moving. Those guards in Mercystar's palace know we're down here. I don't know who they'll tell, but I'd rather finish exploring before we get chased out.
They walked back up the steep tunnel to the main one, just below the palace. Lightsong still felt life down a side tunnel, but he chose the other branch to explore. It soon became apparent that this one split and turned numerous times.
Tunnels to some of the other palaces?
Lightsong poked at a wooden beam used to support the shaft.
Old? Much older than the tunnel to the barracks.
Larimar nodded.
All right then. Time to find out where the main tunnel goes.
Larimar followed as Lightsong approached the main tunnel. Lightsong closed his eyes, trying to determine how close the life was. It was faint, almost beyond his ability to sense. If everything else in this catacomb hadn't been merely rocks and dirt, he wouldn't have noticed the life in the first place. He nodded to Larimar, and they continued down the tunnel as quietly as possible. Did it seem that he was able to move with surprising stealth? Did he have unremembered experience with sneaking about? He was certainly better at it than Larimar. Of course, a tumbling boulder was probably better at moving quietly than Larimar, considering his bulky clothing. The tunnel went on straight for a time without branches. Lightsong looked up, trying to estimate what was above them.
The God King's palace?
He couldn't be certain. It was difficult to judge direction and distance under the ground. He felt excited, thrilled. This was something no god was supposed to do. Sneaking at night, moving through secret tunnels, looking for secrets and clues.
Odd. They give us everything they think we might want. They guilt us with sensation and experience. And yet real feelings, fear, anxiety, excitement, are completely lost to us. Larimar, stop! Listen.
He came for the princess's sister, as I said he would.
You have what you want, then. Really, you pay far too much attention to that one.
Do not underestimate Varsha. He has accomplished more in his life than 100 men, and has done more for the good of all people than you will ever be able to appreciate.
Aren't you planning to kill him?
Yes.
You're a strange one, Denth. However, our goal is accomplished.
You people don't have your war yet.
We will.
Lightsong crouched beside a small pile of rubble. He could see light up ahead, but couldn't distinguish much beyond some moving shadows. His luck seemed remarkably good in arriving to hear this conversation. Was that proof that his dreams were indeed foretellings? Or was it just coincidence? It was very late at night, and anyone still up was likely to be engaged in clandestine activities.
I have a job for you. We've got someone I need you to interrogate.
Too bad. I've got an old friend to torture. I just had to pause to dispose of his monstrosity of a sword.
Denth! Come back here!
You didn't hire me, little man. If you want to make me do something, go get your boss. Until then, you know where to find me.
Lightsong moved back to join Larimar.
What?
Voices ahead. Talking about the war.
Who were they?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Wait here while I...
The sound came from the same place he had heard the voices. And it sounded like...
Blushweaver!
You can't let go of me!
Lightsong's heart was pounding. He took a step.
Your Grace, we should go for help!
We are help.
Then, surprising himself, he charged down the tunnel. He quickly approached the light, rounding a corner and coming into a section of tunnel that had been worked with rock. In seconds, he was running on a smooth stone floor and burst into what appeared to be a dungeon. Blushweaver was tied into a chair. A group of men wearing the robes of the God King's priest stood around her with several uniformed soldiers. Blushweaver's lip was bleeding, and she was crying through a gag that had been placed over her mouth. She wore a beautiful nightgown, but it was dirty and disheveled. The men in the room looked up in surprise, obviously shocked to see someone come up behind them. Lightsong took advantage of the shock and threw his shoulder against the soldier nearest to him. Lightsong knelt down and quickly pulled the fallen soldier's sword from its sheath.
Who's first?
The soldiers regarded him dumbly.
I say you!
Quetzal missed the man by a good 3 inches, fumbling and off balance from the lunge. The guard finally realized what was going on and pulled out his own sword. The priests backed against the wall. Blushweaver blinked at her tears, looking shocked. The soldier nearest Lightsong attacked, and Lightsong raised his blade awkwardly, trying to block, doing a horrible job of it. The guard at his feet suddenly threw himself at Lightsong's legs. Then, one of the standing guards thrust his sword into Lightsong's thigh. Suddenly, Lightsong knew pain. Pain literally greater than any he'd known in his short life. He saw, through tears, Larimar heroically trying to tackle a guard from behind, but the attack was almost as poorly executed as Lightsong's own. The soldier stepped away, several guarding the tunnel, another holding his bloodied blade toward Lightsong's throat.
Funny. That was not at all how I imagined this going.